Welcome to Series 2 of my podcast Stories of Unconscious Bias. I'm Smitha Tharoor. In Series 1, I had the great privilege of hearing stories of unconscious bias from some wonderful people about a wide range of topics. I laughed, cried, and was moved in equal measure. I started this series because I wanted the listeners to realize that we are not alone. All of us have similar stories. They may not be the exact same, but when we hear them, we can hear the parallels in our lives. My speakers have all shared their learning and how they manage their unconscious biases, which is also a wonderful life lesson for us. Series 2 will follow the same style of interview. I hope you enjoy listening. Good morning, David Canals. Thank you so very much for volunteering to have this conversation with me around unconscious bias. To my listeners, I would like to introduce David Canals, who's currently in Palm Springs, but is also very often in London, spends his entire time between both these cities. David is a collector and patron focused on photography and contemporary arts. He works actively with photographers, consulting on the placement of their activities, so their work is both preserved and publicly accessible. And I've had the good fortune of knowing David for a few years now. Thank you so much, David, for joining this conversation.
Not at all. Thank you.
So, David, I'd like to start off. As you know, we're both talking about the unconscious bias. So what do you understand by the meanings of the words unconscious bias?
Well, to me, it's really, you know, the sort of baggage we bring to the table when we meet somebody, we see somebody, we observe somebody, you know, preconceived notion of that person based on their look, their skin color, possibly the way they dress, you know, all those sort of environmental things. And it's, you know, what we carry inside about, you know, how we were raised, how we think about people in that way. So without any basis, you know, you see somebody and you think, oh, they're, you know, flamboyant, or they're eccentric, or they're conservative, or they're black, you know, or whatever that happens to be.
I'm smiling when you're saying that, and you're absolutely correct. And the beauty about these two words is that, you know, there is no real right and wrong here. It's about our experiences and how we react to a situation based on our upbringing or any other experiences that we might have had. So you're absolutely right on that. And I like the fact that you look at somebody and you might think that they're flamboyant just based on how they're dressed. So thinking about, you know, looking at somebody and jumping to conclusions made me think about a story that someone shared with me very recently. So this is an academic who is African Caribbean and living in London. And he's quite tall and quite well built and happens to be gay. But that's by the by, because he, you know, visually you just see a tall, broad, well-built, good-looking black man. And he said to me that when he's amongst women, particularly white women, he finds that they seem very threatened by him. So he then made a considered decision to actually camp up his behavior when he is amongst them so that they would feel less threatened. And as soon as he began to do that, lo and behold, he found that the women were far more relaxed, far more comfortable with him, and he was able to have more productive conversations with them. So when I'm sharing a story like this with you, David, what kind of stories comes to your mind about your own personal experiences?
Well, actually, one very specific story, which is we have my partner and I have a ranch up in the high desert near Joshua Tree. And it must have been late summer of 2016, shortly after we bought it. I used to regularly see a neighbor, and in the back of their pickup truck, it said, you know, retired Marine Corps and proud. And then in the other corner of the truck, it had an NRA, you know, National Rifle Association sticker, you know, member sticker. So, you know, you sort of think, well, you know, ex-Marine, NRA, these are not people I'm going to have much in common with. You know, so you just sort of, you're friendly, you wave, but you really don't engage. And, I don't know, maybe again, late summer, fall of 2016, I was driving up and the wife was on the side of the road with her horse. And I stopped and, you know, asked her, clearly she was in distress. And I said, you know, are you okay? And she said, well, my horse, you know, hurt its foot. And of course, the one day I came out without my phone, I can't get a hold of my husband. So anyway, I said, well, here, just use my phone. So she called her husband. In the interim, we start talking, and she turns out she was very lovely. You know, the conversation was very topical, you know, just sort of, oh, how pretty the landscape is up here, you know, blah, blah, blah. And it's sort of out of the clear blue as the conversation went on. She said, well, I don't know your politics. And so immediately you bristle. I mean, I bristle, you know, the hair goes up on the back of your neck and you're like, oh my God, she's a, you know, fundamentalist, or she's a, you know, whatever. And she said, well, just to say, I'm the head of the local group supporting Hillary Clinton for president. And I mean, I was dumbfounded because I had this complete preconception of the sort of right-wing conservative, you know, person just purely based on these stickers in the back of their car. And the husband, who you would see from time to time, you know, looked like a grizzled, grumpy old ex-Marine, to be honest with you. And it really sort of, and it's still to this day, you know, comes back to sort of, and I've told my daughter this story. I've told other people this story because it's just, we have this, you know, incredible preconceived idea based on this incredibly ridiculous thing of these stickers in the back of their truck window that I just assumed these people were conservative, right wing, you know, whatever. And it turned out to be absolutely the opposite. And so because of that, you sort of forge a completely different relationship. And, you know, it makes me think in terms of this conversation, you just how careful you have to be to sort of prejudge somebody just based on something like that.
Absolutely. And it's powerful because it's not even the person's appearance. You're looking at a sticker on the back of a car. You've not exchanged two words with them. And yet just based on a sticker on the back of a car, you put two and two and make maybe 10. And you then discover much later. It's a powerful story. And it makes me, you know, makes me realize that we all do this so instinctively without even thinking. We don't. It's not just about somebody's clothes and thinking they're flamboyant. You might see, and especially in the U.S., so often cars tell their own narrative with stickers at the back of the car, and then we don't know whose car it is. It could be somebody else driving the car, for all you know, with a very different politics.
Absolutely, yeah.
And also, clearly, in this example, they may be members of the NRA, but they're also equally Hillary Clinton supporters. And why is it that human beings can't be nuanced and multidimensional rather than just one or the other? That's also what comes to mind when you share the story with me. But there's something else that also came to mind because of what you just said. So you said you shared this story with your daughter. Now, I know you well, David, and I know that you're living with your partner in Palm Springs, but you also have a daughter in London. And I wanted to ask you a little bit about that. Because, yes, of course, there are many same-sex couples who do have children now. You know, Elton John famously is one example. But would you be able to share a little bit about any stories you might have had when you first planned to have your daughter, any unconscious biases, anything that you learned from that experience?
Well, I mean, it was very interesting because it, you know, it came about through circumstances with, you know, somebody who's a dear, very old friend of mine. And we had always joked over the years about, you know, when our personal lives kind of completely crumbled, we would have a child together. My daughter's mother is straight. I'm not. And circumstances aligned up to do this, to have a child in 2003, which we did. And it's interesting because from the outside, various gay friends of mine, at the time in 2003, it was less common. Now it's very common, particularly in the U.S. in big, you know, urban cities. It's very common for, you know, gay couples. For me, I always sort of wanted, I never felt comfortable with my partner and I as two men having a child. That's just my bias, I guess. I always sort of felt that a mother had to be present. And so this made it very easy to do it this way. But it's interesting because people from the outside, my family was completely supportive. My parents were both alive at the time. My dad, who I thought would find it very tricky, but who knew Jane, who's my daughter's mom, you know, was totally enthusiastic. And his comment was something about, you know, I think it's incredible that we live in a time when you can do this and very few people will bat an eye. It's not that, you know, you're not going to really have problems, social problems. But I had other friends, particularly gay friends, who really bristled at that time about doing this and about, you know, bringing this to the table. And also it was funny because with some of them, it was like, you know, why would you do this with a straight woman? And it was almost this penalty from their view as a gay man having a child with a straight woman. And that always seemed very odd to me, to be honest. I mean, it never sort of really, and then as it went on and, you know, we've always been very open about all these things. You know, some people do bring these biases that you can't, unless you're a, you know, traditional mom and dad family, you can't do this. And I always found that to be odd because I don't know, I'm guessing I'm an old hippie. I look in terms of the global village and that you know, there's no barrier to do this thing.
Which actually, again, I think is very interesting because people listening in, including me, may or may not think that all gay people think in a similar way and all heterosexual people think in a similar way. And of course, that's not true. And people who are gay were saying to you, hang on a minute, that's kind of odd. Why are you doing that? And you're thinking, why is that odd? That's perfectly normal to me. I want to have a child and that's what I'm doing. And my friend who happens to be straight is supportive of the idea. And that's the end of that. But I spoke recently to a young man in his 20s who was sharing his story with me about how he came out with his parents in Ireland. And you were just saying how supportive your father was of your being a father yourself and having a child, which I think is wonderful because, of course, you are not in your 20s. I'm guessing you're in your 60s. And therefore,
yes, late bloomer.
Yes. So that, of course, means that's a whole different generation. And if your father were alive, I'm guessing he would be perhaps in his 90s. So somebody of that generation, your parents, your father and your mother, how was it for you in recognizing your own sexuality and then coming out with your family in, I'm guessing, probably in the 70s, in the 1970s? And, you know, what did that look like? What did that feel like? As opposed to this gentleman who shared his story, who came out, you know, 10 years ago.
Yeah, it's funny because I was generationally on the cusp of that, you know, in between that kind of Stonewall generation, that sort of first generation of very openly gay political men and sort of the next generation and where we are today of, you know, very open. I remember, you know, early on having the conversation with my mom, I was probably in my teens, you know, and she was very like, I've known you were gay for, I don't know how long, since you were a kid. You know, it's always been sort of pretty clear to me. And it never really, I just sort of always figured you'd figure it out. And, you know, it's kind of was a personal thing. And I have to say, you know, I appreciated that. You know, my dad and I didn't really have an open conversation about it until sometime later. I had changed schools and he drove with me from Kansas City to Utah, where I transferred to the University of Utah. And on that long road trip, we actually talked a couple of times in depth about this. And it was very non, you know, judgmental. He had been in the military, the Air Force, most of his life. And he again said, I think we're living in times where these sorts of things, your sexual preference is not going to be a big issue. You have to be careful. And I think his thing was always, you know, you have to be respectful of other people's views of you, and you have to be respectful of other people. You know what I mean? That whole sort of, so that was very valuable. That was sort of the way I was raised. My siblings and I were raised, that you do have to be respectful of people's differences, whether it's social, economic, racial. So I was lucky in that respect that I was raised in that kind of a household where these things were. But my parents were family was very accepting, not a big deal, jokey a lot of times, completely accepting. You know, I've been with my partner for probably 30 years now. And I remember, you know, my dad, and particularly always treated Mark absolutely the same way as he treated my siblings, girlfriends, boyfriends, you know, whatever. He just, everybody was sort of treated the same. There was never a distinction. And that made it very easy for me. I have gay friends who didn't have that kind of relationship and had horribly painful, who were disowned, who were, you know, and so I still to this day feel hugely honored that my family and my parents were so sort of accepting, and it was just a non-issue. It just sort of was, okay, great, let's get on with our, you know, get on with our lives.
That's so wonderful and so moving, really, because it is an honor and it is a privilege when we look back on our childhood and our upbringing, and especially when we talk to other friends and recognize that they don't have the same experiences as us. We then realize, my gosh, how lucky we are. And that certainly sounds like you do have that honor and that privilege of being brought up in a wonderful, inclusive, you know, accepting, liberal family. And that, of course, not many people do have. So when you look back on your childhood and your upbringing, on your support of the family that you've had, and of course now that you have a daughter and how you're bringing her up as well, what kind of advice would you give to listeners? You know, we all have unconscious biases. We can't help it. Life's like that. Tomorrow you might see a sticker on another car and have something, you know, jumping into your head because based on some previous experience you might have had. So what do we do about that? What top tips can you give us?
I don't know if there's really tips. I guess the thing I would say is, you know, try to remain open. It is hard as a human being because we all come to the table with these preconceived ideas of people. But, you know, really try to be open and try to step back a little bit when you encounter somebody or meet somebody. And I guess, you know, if it's somebody you want to have some sort of engagement with, whether superficial or more, you know, in depth as a friend, you have to give people time to reveal themselves. You know, you have to reveal yourself to them. And so I think those are the biggest things for me, is you have to really be open. You have to really think in terms of how someone you encounter, you know, what is their life like? How are they living in the world? How are they, you know, what are they encountering externally? And I think that helps. I mean, I always sort of, with my daughter, I try to encourage her to always be respectful of other people's points of view. I have so many friends right now in this horribly divided, polarized political world we live in, both in the UK and in the US, you know, where in the UK people don't want to, you know, if you're a pro-Remain, you don't want to have anything to do with a Brexiteer. And in the US, if you're a Trump supporter, you know, you don't want anything to do with a Democrat or a liberal, or vice versa. And that's not, we can't live in a world like that. You know, you have to sort of be respectful of people's, I mean, I say to people in this country, you know, not everybody who voted for Trump is an idiot. There were a lot of smart people who voted for the guy. You just look at the numbers. You look in London with Brexit, a lot of smart, educated people voted for Boris Johnson. And I don't think you can dismiss that. I think you have to sort of look at that in a broad, holistic way and say, why? You know, what are these things? Why are people thinking this way? And I think that really goes to, you know, when you encounter somebody, you have to really step back and try to, and sometimes it doesn't gel. Sometimes somebody does turn out to be a complete and utter fruitcake that you have nothing in common with, or who's so judgmental of you. I mean, I've encountered it over the years. I have, you know, I don't present, I think, as gay. I'm told that all the time. And I, over the years, have encountered when people discover that I'm gay, they really don't kind of want to be my friend, you know? And it's like, okay, that's fine. If that's the sole reason you're prejudging me is because I'm gay and you don't want to be friends with a gay person, that's fine. I, you know, we're not going to have a good friendship anyway if that's a prejudged idea.
I mean, essentially I think your advice is actually spot on, because we are living in a political sort of turmoiled world at the moment. You know, everywhere you look, and just UK and the US are two good examples of that, but many other countries I can think of too. I think it's important for us to understand that we are multidimensional. We are not just one aspect of us. We could have wonderful friendships and relationships with people who may not be aligned to us politically, but that doesn't matter. It's about being open, honest and listening and really trying not to be judgmental. So that's great advice. And your daughter is very lucky to have you as her dad as she grows up into this world and learns to navigate everything that's coming ahead of her. David, this is so very kind of you to have this conversation with me, David Canaus. Thank you.
Not at all. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to my podcast, Stories of Unconscious Bias. If you enjoyed hearing this episode, do tune in every Saturday for a new interview. And if you could share, leave a review and rating, that would be hugely appreciated. You can find me on Instagram and Twitter @SmithaTharoor, and feel free to suggest new guests. Until next week.